Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Making Milestones podcast. I have been less on the ball with doing regular podcast episodes, so thank you, everyone, for your patience and support of this podcast. I know it's not the most traditionally set up podcast. I don't do regular posts. Probably not the best edited because I kind of just do what I can with the time that I have, and probably also not the best audio. So I'm really appreciative of the fact that people actually like and listen to this podcast because it's something that I do for fun, and the way that I've been going about producing these podcast episodes and editing them has been lower stress for me, and it makes it so that I'm more able to provide content without there being the pressure of having to have it be perfect. So I'm really appreciative of that. I have a great topic in mind for today that I wanted to talk about based off of some discussions that I've been having on my socials. And the topic for today is going to be discussing negative reinforcement versus positive reinforcement and just kind of that whole debate, and especially the online components of it with how people react to it, the defensiveness involved, how kind of I reacted to it initially before I started really delving into positive reinforcement training, any guilt associated with either side, and just kind of helping people understand like what it is, like what doing the best you can for your horse is. Because I know there's a lot of like internal shame and unrest that people will feel about not doing the best that they can with their horses. And that internal insecurity can sometimes get projected onto other people who are merely sharing information that does make you feel attacked. And it's super normal. Happened to me all the time when I was learning. So anyways, I wanted to discuss that because I think that's a very important topic. And it's something that I'm really passionate about. And like, these podcast episodes offer me more ability to really thoroughly explain where it is that my little brain is going in a way that I find is often lost in writing online, because people either don't read the whole post or they read it in a different tone than what I was writing it in my head. It results in a misunderstanding. So I really appreciate that people are willing to listen to these podcasts. I wish more of the people who misinterpret what it is I'm trying to say would listen to them, but they probably can't handle listening to my voice for that long because they think I'm annoying, which I understand. Before we jump into the topic, I just wanted to say a couple of exciting things, little updates. If you didn't see my post that I made on my Instagram and Facebook a couple of weeks ago, I got signed by a publisher for a book that I'm writing, and it's going to be coming out for spring or fall 2025. I'm really excited about it. I'm super excited to be working with this publisher. They're really aligned in like my types of views and what I hope to bring to the world with this book. And it's just like a really cool and amazing experience. I got that all set up by my amazing literary agent, Carlene Giesler. And I'm really thankful for all of that. So that's kind of why I've kind of been all over the map, because there's just been a lot of stuff going on. This is going to be a very busy year, but I'm super excited about that. So please stay tuned, because I can't wait to share more about that once I'm able to. And I'm really looking forward to getting the book finished so that everyone can see it and read it if they so choose. Really exciting. So that's really great. And I'm also going to be speaking this weekend at the Paris Horse Welfare Summit on Hyperflexion again. I'm going to be doing it virtually this time because it was just too rushed and also too expensive to go back out to Paris to speak. I wish I could, but life is expensive. So if you're interested in listening to that, you can sign up for the live stream or you can watch the replays after the fact. And again, really appreciate your support with that. The last thing to mention is that, just to plug myself, because I need to pay rent and I don't put ads on these podcasts, generally speaking, I'm having a sale in my store, 20% off everything, including clearance items. So the prices are really, really cheap. I'm running out of space in my storage area and I really need to get stuff moved. So my loss is your gain. And the 20% off store-wide sale ends May 1st. So you have until next week to get your orders in. And if you choose to do that, I really appreciate it. It helps me continue doing what I'm doing. It helps me get ahead and really start to like chase towards my dreams, because I'm really just trying to gun towards making my business bigger so that I can really afford to live the life that I hope to with horses and expand my training practice and have the control and ability to like run my own farm eventually and build towards that dream. So I really appreciate that. You can check out that store at shopmilestone.com. Eck. That's shopmilestoneeq.com. I'll also put the link down below in the description. You can also subscribe to my Patreon channel for more Q&As, behind the scenes, tutorials, or just to support what I do. You can subscribe for as little as $1 a month, and that's always really appreciated. I also have an Instagram subscription that you can subscribe to for 99 cents just to help me continue producing my content and doing what I'm doing. And I really appreciate any and all of that support. And you can also check out my website where I have previous webinars or where you can book online training consults and more. And that's milestoneequestrian.ca. And my Patreon is patreon.com/SDEquus. That's patreon.com/SDEQUUS. I'll put all those links down below. I'm also on YouTube if you want to check out free videos. My YouTube views have tanked since I got hacked a couple of years ago, so any support on there is also appreciated because I'm just essentially trying to build as many revenue streams as possible to keep the dream alive and make these types of things happen. And the podcast is all part of that. So thank you for your support in my brand and in what I do, and it's greatly appreciated. But let's just jump into the topic. So positive reinforcement versus negative reinforcement is a pretty hot topic in the horse world nowadays, and I find that it's met with a lot of defensiveness. And this is the way that I responded to it initially as well. And I think that part of the issue is that before you really put the time into getting a thorough understanding of operant conditioning, it can be really hard to understand what people are actually meaning when they talk about negative reinforcement and positive reinforcement from a behavioral science perspective. And it can result in feeling attacked or feeling like negative reinforcement is being unfairly criticized or labeled as cruel or abusive when that's not the case. And I find that this stems from people saying that negative reinforcement is use of aversives. Aversive and abusive kind of sound similar. And if you look up what aversive means, it means like displeasurable, like uncomfortable, something that the learner would prefer to avoid. And people don't like that. The important thing to note is like the level of aversion of a stimulus is dependent on like the learner, because some are just more sensitive. They might find like certain things more uncomfortable than others. And also just like the intensity of how it is applied. It doesn't equate to abuse. You can make something so aversive that it becomes abusive, but the use of negative reinforcement in itself is not abusive. I have personally never said that, and I'm 1000% positive of that. Like, incorrect use of it can for sure become abusive, but I've never said negative reinforcement as a whole is abusive. But people take my labeling of it as aversive as an attack on the entirety of that training tactic. And they often feel like I'm calling it abusive and then project that onto myself. But the important takeaway is that it is use of aversives. I've explained this a lot, and basically the gist of it is that negative reinforcement is the removal of a stimulus to reinforce a behavior. Reinforcing a behavior means making a behavior more likely to reoccur. In order for the removal of a stimulus to be reinforcing, it has to be something that the learner would prefer to not have there. Because otherwise, if it was something that they liked or wanted to seek out, the removal of it would actually be punishing, because they'd be like, hey, give that back. A human comparison I can use for this is if you are chilling and playing video games in your room or doing something, and your parents are nagging you to go do the dishes, and they keep coming up and breaking your focus from what you're doing and nagging you and nagging you and nagging you. You find the sound of their voice and them coming into your room aversive. When you finally go do the thing, they stop nagging you. And then that is negative reinforcement. It causes you to do what you're doing, but you're doing it because you want something that you find irritating to stop. In comparison, positive reinforcement is the addition of a stimulus to reinforce a behavior. In order for it to be reinforcing to add a stimulus, the stimulus has to be something that the learner likes. And everyone has their own likes and dislikes, right? So trying to use a reward that the horse you're training doesn't like, it's not going to be reinforcing to the horse. You have to find something that they like. Some horses really like scratches, and that can be reinforcing for them in training a lot. Other horses don't like them enough, or they're just neutral towards them, and it's not going to be very reinforcing. So the key is to find something that the learner likes enough that when you add it, they want to continue doing that behavior because it feels good. So the primary difference between negative reinforcement and positive reinforcement is that one is engaging the seeking system in the horse, where you're wanting the horse to seek out reward that they want to have, whereas the other is engaging the avoidance system in the horse, where the horse is trying to avoid something that they don't really like. And again, the level of aversion doesn't need to be super high. It just has to be something that they're like, rather they're not. Like, have you ever seen a fly land on your horse? They twitch their skin to get the fly off. Their life isn't ruined by the fly landing on them. It's just mildly annoying and they'd prefer that it stops. And that is kind of the gist of negative reinforcement. Properly done, negative reinforcement should not escalate to high levels of pressure and stress. When it's done improperly and people escalate the pressure to a really high level, it can start to hit a point where it becomes really punishing and scary to the horse, and it can absolutely be misused and it can create a really stressed horse. The key is to try to avoid escalating the pressure at all and to just have like the same relative amount of pressure to get their response. And if your horse isn't understanding you, then you have to change what it is you're doing. Now, the next thing that people tend to get confused about is that they think that applying any pressure to your horse is negative reinforcement. Not all pressure is aversive. If it were, horses wouldn't groom each other because they wouldn't like it. So pressure can be neutral. Pressure can be pleasurable. It depends on the context in which it is used. When you're using pressure and release, aka negative reinforcement, as a training tactic, it is reliant on the pressure being aversive. Otherwise, it will not work. It will not affect behavioral change. So within that context, the pressure has to be aversive to garner a response. On the flip side, you can teach tactile cues using positive reinforcement. And essentially, the context in which this works is you apply a neutral pressure stimulus, a pressure that the horse does not find aversive enough that they're like, I want this gone. They can ignore it. They can tune it out. They're neutral to it. It has no linked cue, so they just ignore it. And then you link that tactile cue to an already learned behavior, such as creating movement using a target stick or a vocal cue. And with repetition and reward, they then learn, hey, when I do this specific behavior, I get a reward when this tactile pressure is applied. And then they learn what it means. In that context, it has not been taught using negative reinforcement. It's not been taught by making the pressure aversive. It's been taught by using a neutral pressure stimulus, linking it to an already learned behavior, and then creating a response and creating a cue. And it's not dissimilar to like teaching a horse a vocal cue, where you essentially just link a vocal sound to a specific outcome. And then they learn that that sound is what asks them to do a specific thing. So it's just like that. So not all pressure is aversive. People who promote using primarily positive reinforcement type training programs are not claiming that they just control their horse off of straight vibes and never apply pressure or touch them. The key is that not all pressure is aversive. Now, all of that aside, I find that the hardest part of this discourse is that a lot of people want to perpetuate the notion that relief of pressure is a reward. And they get really mad when you tell them that that's not the case. And some people will tell me that this is just like arguing semantics and it's being like overly obsessed with verbiage and words, but it's really not. Like, I think that the terms we use to describe the training that we do matter, especially when the terms being used are misinformation. Relief of pressure is relief. When you release the pressure, you're providing the horse with relief from an aversive pressure. It is not a reward. A reward is something gained. For example, let's say you see a missing dog poster, and instead of providing you with money, the person sees you looking at this poster, follows you home, and just harasses you until you find their dog. Are you going to feel like you were rewarded when they leave you alone after they get what they want? No, you're going to feel relieved that they're finally leaving you alone and you get to return to your previous neutral state. So you're not gaining anything. A reward is gaining something that is desired by the learner. Relief is the removal of something that is not desired by the learner. And this is why it's so important to have that distinction, because people who truly believe that the relief of pressure is rewarding to the horse, it doesn't change how the horse feels about the training methods that they're using. The horse still feels exactly the same about them. They still feel the pressure as aversive because that is how the training is functioning. No matter how you choose to mislabel things, it does not change the outcome of how the horse actually feels it, because it all stems to the learning processes involved. The distinction is important because if you want training to feel rewarding to your horses, you can add rewards, like especially when you're starting out in positive reinforcement. Doing negative reinforcement with a cherry on top is like the term that's been used by a lot of people. I think it was coined by Shauna Karish. but it's where you ask your horse to do these cues that you've taught with negative reinforcement, and then you provide a reward. That's better than doing no positive reinforcement, in my opinion, because it provides them with an extra added incentive to want to do something. And it also makes it a lot more clear when they've done the exact right thing. And it's a more welcoming and friendly way to get started in positive reinforcement. Or just using some positive reinforcement, teaching your horse fun tricks, target training them, using positive reinforcement to teach them how to tie more calmly, to teach them how to trailer load. You don't have to just like nosedive into it and just like commit to doing it in every aspect of training. It doesn't have to be that way. You can start using a little bit and seeing how you like it and then adjust accordingly. But the fact of the matter is that no matter how we choose to label things, they are what they are from a behavioral science standpoint. This discussion is not up for debate, and I find people get really frustrated when I don't listen to their piece, when they're trying to argue why negative reinforcement is rewarding because the relief of pressure is the reward. And I don't do that to be mean. I shut down what they're saying because at the end of the day, they're arguing against decades worth of behavioral science research using anecdotes. And that's not particularly helpful. Anecdotes are notoriously biased and they lack the level of research and credibility and peer review that is required of people who are doing scientific study. And behavioral science components like negative reinforcement and positive reinforcement, which are facets of operant conditioning, they're applicable to all types of species. Like people can be negatively reinforced or positively reinforced. Virtually any type of animal can as well. They've trained freaking bees with positive reinforcement. So it's something that extends across the boundaries of species, and it's something that is how it is, regardless of how divergently the animals think. Obviously, horses are flight animals. They're not predators, but that doesn't change how they experience negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement. And in my opinion, as a professional and as someone who's studied behavior and has really shifted the way that I approach horses because of it, it actually makes more sense to train a flight animal using positive reinforcement because they're innately fearful animals. And if we're operating off of causing them discomfort, at its core, we're making a higher degree of potential of making them feel unsafe or stressed during training, which makes them more dangerous because horses that are responding to things dangerously are stressed horses, full stop. A stressed horse is a horse that is more likely to engage in flight behaviors, which are dangerous to people. So I think that it makes more sense to use positive reinforcement. And I also like positive reinforcement from the standpoint of it provides more clarity because when you use a bridge signal, which is a verbal, like auditory cue, that tells the horse when they've done the desired behavior, it makes it very clear that like that exact moment is when they did the right thing. Whereas there's less clarity with negative reinforcement because you're adding and releasing pressure all of the time. And there's going to be moments where you're like, yes, in your head, that's exactly what I want. But there's so many different things that the horse could be doing in that moment that it's less clear to the horse. So I do find that use of rewards provides for more clarity. Now, negative reinforcement is not ineffective. It's not. Saying that the relief of pressure is not a reward is not criticizing the efficacy of negative reinforcement. Obviously, it's effective. Otherwise, the vast majority of things that we have done with horses for the last several centuries would not have been possible because they've been primarily trained with negative reinforcement. It is, of course, effective. It works. No one's denying that. And it also can be used ethically. But it can also be used unethically. Positive reinforcement can also be used unethically if you're using it in an extremely coercive way, such as withholding food and making your horse really hungry so that they feel desperate to participate in training. So both can be misused. But even with the most correct use of negative reinforcement, it is still using aversives to reinforce behaviors. It is not a rewards-based training method. That is not a criticism. It's not an attack. It's not saying that you shouldn't use it. It is just a behavioral fact. And I think that's something that we as a community need to pause for a moment and consider. Is if the idea of using aversives to reinforce your horse's behavior in training as your primary or only reinforcer, if that makes you feel uncomfortable, then the onus is on you to unpack, one, why that is, and two, if you want training to feel rewarding to your horse, to start introducing rewards. It can change. The onus is not on other people to mislabel well-researched facts in order to make you more comfortable in continuing to do things the way that you want to do, but without having to acknowledge how they're actually working and functioning. And again, not a criticism, not an attack, but I find it really problematic, especially with the current state of the horse world, with like how many actually abusive things are being highlighted at an international level and upper level competition. The lack of understanding of behavioral science and operant conditioning and how our training is actually working and changing horses' behavior makes it easier for people to abuse horses because they fundamentally don't understand why the things they're doing are working and how it feels to the horse. That lack of understanding makes it harder to do the right thing. Whereas if you're using negative reinforcement, you recognize it's aversive and you recognize that aversives can escalate to a point where they're highly uncomfortable and very, very stressful. It makes it easier to stay within a threshold where the horse is less likely to be highly stressed. So knowledge is power. There is no loss in understanding the science behind how training works. Training is a science. Behavioral science. Training is the science of modifying behavior. Every time we train a horse to do something, we are using behavioral science, whether we are aware of it or not, because that is how it works. That is how we create behavioral change in animals, especially when we're teaching them things that go directly against their nature and that they would never offer naturally. So it's a science. And whether or not people choose to accept that as fact, it remains a science. And with my platforms, like, I've kind of hit the point where it's like, I'm not here to coddle people and sugarcoat things. If it makes people uncomfortable for me to talk about extensively researched information in an honest and just frank manner, then that's something that's a bridge that they need to cross on their own and address on their own. Use whatever training method you want, be it negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement or a blend of the two, but understand how the reinforcers you are working work and why they do. It will never be a loss to learn more about operant conditioning and learn more about how it works because it'll allow you to problem solve in training better. And it'll allow you to understand which methods you are using better and therefore apply them better. It will make you a better trainer regardless of whether or not you use negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement. Now, I think the resistance to accepting that negative reinforcement is use of aversives largely stems from guilt. I think that people want to be able to continue training the way that they always have and not having to consider how it actually works because they're made uncomfortable with the idea that their primary motivator for the horse is applying a pressure that the horse doesn't like. And they can't reconcile with that fact because they don't want to have to walk down the path of completely reforming the way that they do things because it's scary, it's a long path, and it's a complicated one. But at the same time, they're uncomfortable with acknowledging the idea that their primary motivator for their horse is the use of an aversive stimulus because they look at that and they go, if that's the only thing I'm motivating my horse with, why would they enjoy training? And they might not consciously be aware of why that is, but I think that's what it is deep down because that definitely was what it was for me. And I was really resistant to that because of that. It made me feel guilty. It made me feel really uncomfortable because in my soul, I could not reconcile why my horses would enjoy spending time with me and doing what they're doing if all they were being incentivized by was aversive pressure. And that was something that was really, really hard to come to terms with and that I didn't want to have to come to terms with because it meant that for me to fully sit with that and then make the changes that sitting with that would push me to want to make, it was uprooting everything as I knew it. And that was a really, really uncomfortable thing to sit with. So I kind of went into denial at first and tried to double down and argue. And I also had a lack of understanding as well, where I thought that people who were saying that negative reinforcement use aversive pressure, I thought that they were saying that all pressure was aversive because I couldn't understand how to train a tactile cue with positive reinforcement. But that was my bad, and it was an indicator of my lack of understanding and my lack of grasp on behavioral science. And I was projecting that onto people who understood what it was that they were doing and getting mad at them because I couldn't understand. And sometimes a lot of our frustration is coming from a place of that lacks understanding. It's coming from a place where we cannot see the full picture that someone is trying to paint because we are missing a crucial piece of education. And that's why it's so important to look further into these things and to kind of approach them with curiosity and want to learn more about them because it'll help you understand things better. Another facet of positive reinforcement that threw me way off initially was that people were discouraging the use of punishment. At the time, my training was so like prehistoric and like underdeveloped that I couldn't fathom how you discourage unwanted behavior without punishing. And when people said that punishment they didn't recommend and said that positive punishment in particular, which is the addition of a stimulus that is punishing and that the horse doesn't like to decrease the amount that they display a behavior, I thought that they were just basically being like, let your horse get away with whatever you want. Like, don't discipline your horse. Don't do anything. Just let them engage in bad behavior. Don't solve the problem. Because I could not fathom how you would discourage an undesired behavior without punishing a horse. I couldn't fathom how you could possibly manage that, because I didn't have the capacity to understand it due to how underdeveloped my understanding of operant conditioning was. So I thought that these positive reinforcement trainers were essentially just saying to be a permissive trainer that lets your horse do anything and like just has them engage in dangerous behaviors, when that's not the case. Saying that punishment should be avoided is saying that we should be addressing the factors that are leading the horse to engaging in certain behaviors, because a lot of the times it's related to stress, anxiety, pain, or some underlying issue. And if you address that underlying motivation, the behavior goes away. You can also counter condition unwanted behaviors by rewarding behaviors that are in conflict with that behavior. So for example, if your horse is pawing in the cross ties, if you reward them every time they stop pawing and put their foot down, you're not punishing them for the pawing, but you're making it more valuable for them to keep both feet on the ground. Alternatively, too, you could go, pawing is probably like an anxious response or they're bored. Work on why they're anxious in that setting or why they're bored and provide them with an outlet for that, and then they're not going to do it anymore. So avoiding the use of punishment isn't about being permissive. It's about rewarding the behaviors you want to see rather than focusing on the behaviors you don't want to see and punishing those. It's about looking at the underlying causes of behaviors and addressing those rather than just suppressing behaviors by punishing them. Because behavioral suppression is a problem. It doesn't actually deal with what is leading to unwanted behavior. And this is, again, a really well-documented thing. Like, punishment, particularly positive punishment, is extremely well studied and well documented across species, humans included, obviously horses included, and it has a lot of risks associated with it. It has a lot of risk of follow-up behavior, which is the horse or like the learner adopting new behaviors to serve the purpose of the old one that you have suppressed with punishment. And they're not necessarily going to be behaviors you like. They could be worse. It can also result in learned helplessness and shutdown, and it can also result in internalizing a lot of frustration and discomfort that later comes out in an explosive way later in life. There's a lot of studies that are long-term studies on the same kids, of kids who had punishment used frequently in their childhood, and there's studies that link that towards them being more reactive, easily angered, and having difficulties emotionally regulating as adults. So avoiding punishment is just about approaching things from a more tactical way, where we're looking at why behaviors exist, because they always exist for a reason, whether we understand what that reason is or not. And essentially training and operating like with understanding horse behavior is playing detective and trying to get to the bottom of why they do things the way that they do and looking into what the variables and factors are that are leading to certain responses. And it can take time to do that. It can for sure be really difficult to do that. And especially when you lack the understanding of how operant conditioning is applied and you have a less well-versed education on all of the nuances of horse behavioral science and like how and why they behave the way that they do, it's really hard because you're essentially trying to get through a maze with a map that is missing a ton of pieces. And then you can't connect those pathways and those lines that people are trying to draw because you don't have the capacity and understanding to come to that conclusion. And that can lead to a lot of frustration with people. And I get it, because like I've totally been there. I totally get the frustration. But The horse world is quite far behind other animal industries when it comes to accepting the validity and merit of behavioral science. So it is something that we need to start becoming more comfortable with. And like, that's also why I talk about it so much, because it needs to be talked about. I don't think the answer is not saying anything in fear of making people feel uncomfortable, because at the end of the day, imperfect advocacy and imperfect steps towards change are better than no steps at all. And of course, it's not going to be perfect. Like, of course, I'm going to make mistakes as a creator. It's not always going to land the way that I intended to, because I also can't always predict where people's perceptions are going to be coming from and what biases they might be carrying around, what tone they're going to read writing in and whatnot, and neither can anyone else. So there's always the room for misunderstanding, but this is why it's so important for people to look into this on their own time and just study operant conditioning, just to get a better grasp of it, because then they'll have an easier time understanding what people mean and it'll feel like less of an attack. So negative reinforcement, I don't think it is at all reasonable to think about phasing it completely out of the horse world at this point. In theory, it would be lovely to have people use as much reward-based training as possible, but I don't think it's unethical or unkind to the horses to better the usage of negative reinforcement, lower the amount of aversive tools used, lower the amount of punishment we use, and just become more understanding of the horse's experience in training. Like, I think that's a huge win. I think harm reduction is really important. And I think harm reduction starts with education. You cannot reduce harm when you're not even aware that you are causing harm. You can't. It's completely impossible to reduce harm when you don't think you're causing harm, because there's no way that you can make steps to change that when you think that nothing's wrong. And like, the other thing to note, and this is where it goes into like wanting to do the best you can with your horse and like underlying guilt and shame, doing things wrong is not an indicator that you're a bad person. In the horse world, you're more likely to, at some point at least, have mentors that teach you incorrect information than you are to have access to people who teach you meticulously, scientifically accurate things, because there's no quality control among trainers. And trainers can speak as experts on topics that they are not well versed on. So it is really, really difficult to never be put in a situation where you are misinformed about things. And being misinformed about things is a part of learning, because you have to make mistakes in order to repair them. And I think this is where a lot of people get frustrated and lost with all of this, where they feel like they're being attacked and they feel ashamed of the fact that they've done things wrong, and they feel like people discussing a lack of correctness in horse training or where there's need for change is an attack on them as a person, because they identify very heavily with the methods that they use. And that's not what it is, because we are so much more than how we train and handle our horses. We're ever-changing, growing, and developing entities who are capable of learning how to do better. And we are capable of learning how to alter training methods that we have outgrown. And that starts with becoming aware of the fact that there are better and different ways of doing things. So making mistakes and using methods that may or may not have caused harm to your horse, because some people do use really punishing methods. We do end up using really harsh equipment that causes horses pain and distress because we've been told to do so by professionals that we trusted. And everyone around us, for the most part, especially if it's all within the same barn, does the same thing. So you're like in this little echo chamber where the only voices outside of the chamber that you're hearing say anything different are occurring online. And then you feel like you're being judged. You feel confused. You feel in conflict with what you've learned from people that you know in person and have grown to love and respect, because those people are highly nuanced people who have good traits and bad traits and who you've developed a relationship with, whereas people online you haven't. And it's normal to have an inherent level of distrust with people that you do not know, and to lean more heavily on people that you've developed a more intimate relationship with in person. However, this is where this is important. You should always question the information given to you, whether it's given in person by someone you trust or online. And people who are coming from a science-based approach can direct you in the right direction for where you can learn more about what it is they're saying and look at the studies behind it, because there's lots. I never want people to just take my word for things and just be like, oh, well, Shelby said it, so her word is gospel. Let's just run with it. No, question what I say, because I've been wrong in the past. I've said things with my full chest online in the past that were complete and utter bullshit, and I was wrong and I was ignorant. And I'm probably going to look back at stuff that I'm talking about now in a few years when we advance in our knowledge and when we study more, and there's going to be stuff that I look back with a more critical eye, but that's the nature of growth. If you're never looking back at things that you've done in the past and going, I don't like that, I should have done things differently, then you haven't grown very much. Like, it's a part of growth. Recognizing where you went wrong as you learn more and do better is part of growth. And that you should always question the information offered to you, even by your trainer. If a trainer you're with loses their mind when you question what they tell you and you express curiosity and ask for more information on how you can look into things, then that is probably a trainer that you might want to reconsider being with, because they should be able to describe to you how what they're teaching functions, why it does, and also be comfortable with you looking further into it rather than just taking their word for it. Because a curious learner is going to learn way more because they're going to be open to more information. So I would view it as a red flag in a mentor if they get upset when you do your own studying of stuff and question them on things and be like, oh, look at, like, I found this, like, what do you think of this? And like asking their perspective on things and questioning it. You shouldn't blindly believe people simply because they say that they're a professional. There's no quality control in the horse world. And if what they are saying is fact, they should be able to have access to at least some resources that they can send you to in order to learn about that. That's why I have the resources page on my website that you can access for free that has a bunch of studies you can look at. I need to update it because it's quite outdated and it's a little bit more biased in favor of negative reinforcement, because at the time I was going through that transitional journey where I was looking for confirmation bias, but it still has good resources. So don't just take my word for things. Don't just take your trainer's word for things. Look further into things. Have curiosity. Recognize the fact that even though you're doing the best you can still be wrong. Recognize the fact that loving your horse and wanting to do what's best for them doesn't mean that that's always going to be what happens, because we get misled. We make mistakes. It's part of the process. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean you're an irredeemable person. Doesn't mean that you aren't a good horse person. The fact that you can even look at your mistakes and go like, I did something wrong, or be curious about it, or be worried about how you approach your horse, or be hurt by the idea that you've harmed them. Those are all signs that you want to show up the best way that you can for your horse. And it can be really isolating, and you can feel trapped by circumstance when you're boarding horses, or when you're riding horses that don't belong to you, or when you're stuck in an echo chamber where there's a barn that is just like in direct opposition with so much of the other information you're seeing online. That can be really scary, and it can result in you doubling down to defend things, even though there is plenty of evidence in the scientific realm showing why those things aren't necessarily true. And like, I think that's also part of the learning process. Learning how to come home to yourself enough and trust your own ability to grow and learn, and your own perception of things and your ability to adapt, that's part of the process of becoming a better horse person. And like, before you do that, you're going to defer to what's easiest. If you're in an echo chamber where everyone is displaying the same types of training, it's easier to fold and go in the same direction as them instead of swimming against the current. Because swimming against the current when you're surrounded by people who are fighting you on that is exhausting, and it requires a lot of internal confidence and resilience to continue doing that, knowing that you're always going to be met with opposition. So it's about finding home within yourself, finding trust within your ability to learn and grow, and also finding like your own crowd of people, like people who can support you and uphold you, and that you feel like you can talk to through good and bad things and get support and feel loved and appreciated and understood, even when they don't agree with everything that you do, and even when you are doing things wrong. People that you can confide in and discuss these things with and just have there by your side to support you through the learning journey and help you rest as you swim against the current. It's about finding people like that, the people who resonate with you. It'll make it all easier. But as it stands now, there's so many barriers in place for horse people to go and start developing more modernized training tactics and to do better by their horses and learn more and start to take a more science-based approach, because science is not readily accepted in the horse world still. It's not. And because of all of those barriers, it's often easier to just go with the flow and not resist, because resisting puts you up for a way more critique and it can make your day-to-day life at the barn really uncomfortable and unwelcoming. So I think that that's something where it's like people shouldn't shame themselves for doing that too, because I think that's part of the growth journey, is developing the confidence and level of self-acceptance and self-understanding and resilience to withstand the difficulties of having people constantly question what it is that you're doing and having people feel triggered by you doing things a different way and lashing out at you completely unprovoked because there's something inside of them that you're triggering. Even the sheer act of training with positive reinforcement or accepting science-based information when it comes to horse management and stuff, and just becoming more hypercritical of things that are so normalized in the horse world. Even just doing that for yourself and sharing about that journey yourself and not making it about anyone but yourself, that makes people who haven't done that work feel highly uncomfortable and they're more likely to lash out at you. And that can be really, really hard to deal with, especially if you have any type of online platform or if you're at a busy barn with lots of different people with lots of different opinions. It opens you up to just be in situations where you feel criticized or where you feel like you're under a microscope or a spotlight, and where you have to have enough faith in what it is that you're doing that you can continue to push along and do it even as people try to drag you the other way or make you doubt yourself. And I think that's really important. And this goes with like whatever training method you use. Even for people who I think are deliberately denying science and rejecting factual information, even for those people, I think it's important to get to the point where you have enough trust in your ability to learn, your ability to understand the knowledge you have now and your ability to apply it, and just your current level of knowledge and all of that jazz. To have enough confidence in yourself that someone else cannot rock your confidence to the degree where you're enraged by what they say and where they live rent-free in your head for an extended period of time because you're so triggered by what they say. It's important to get to the point where you can have confidence in what it is that you're doing with or without the support of others. And if you can't, I think that that is an important thing to unpack, because usually there is some underlying reason as to why, some type of internal doubt in what you are doing that makes you really upset when people expose inconsistencies in what you're doing or go against what it is that you're doing. And starting to identify those triggers and get curious about why they exist will really, really help you in that learning journey, regardless of what information you choose to accept or not, because there's always a reason for why we're triggered. There's always an underlying motivation. Honestly, even for myself, I've been having to work on that a lot, because I still get triggered sometimes. Like, I'm not going to be like, I am like freaking the calmest, best person ever, because that is a total load of shit. But I used to get a lot more triggered by people deliberately rejecting information and deliberately, like, even when you spoon fed them scholarly resources to show them why they should believe things, they still are like, nah, that's not true, I don't believe it, like, blah blah blah, horses are individuals, they just make up like whatever excuse. It used to make me so worked up and mad, and I could feel my nervous system becoming super engaged and stressed, and I would spend so much time going back and forth with these people who were just committed to misunderstanding me, and it was a waste of time and it didn't make me feel good. And I think that a lot of that trigger was rooted in the fact that I was frustrated with myself for not making changes earlier in how I did things. And I saw the ignorance that I used to display mirrored to me in other people. And my anger at myself for not making those changes earlier was then projected at those people who were essentially providing me a mirror to an old version of myself, a version of myself that I was actively trying to leave behind and grow past, but a version of myself that I had some level of resentment towards, because I was just very frustrated that I didn't figure these things out sooner and feeling really guilty and ashamed of the way that I'd handled horses for so long and just wanting to do things differently. So when people provided me with a mirror to effectively the way that I used to be, it was very triggering because it was just reminding me of how I used to do the same things. And then it would elicit a very reactive and emotional response to me. Similarly, before I really started to jump into science-based training methods, and when I was using primarily negative reinforcement, and when I still bought into a lot of punishment principles, when people who were on the science-based side criticized that and were like, your horse is stressed or he's displaying pain behaviors, it would really trigger me and I'd get really defensive and reactive and angry because I loved my horse. I didn't want to be causing him pain. And I was in a situation where I felt trapped and like unsure of how to go about fixing it. Because, for example, a lot of people used to comment on how horrible Milo's feet used to be, which is true. They were right. But I had been seeking help from like my vets and my farriers and like trying different trimmers. And I was feeling very stuck and trapped because I didn't know how to go about doing it myself. I was having a hard time finding a hoof care practitioner that was willing to work alongside my vet in the way that they needed to, because my vet knew, like we knew that his hoof angles were not good and we were working on them. And it was just that it was very hard to see where there was improvement being made, because initially there might be some improvement with certain hoof care providers and then it would kind of like stagnate and just go into a plateau and then it wasn't improving. And then some of the farriers would get offended when I was like, my vet said that the horse needs this. And they'd be like, well, I'm a hoof care professional. Your vet, you're like, I'm not going to do your vet's job. They should let me do mine. So there was resistance to that. And then there was also the standpoint of needing to give people enough cycles of doing his feet to try to improve them and giving them a chance and not trying to just expect an instant difference. So it was very frustrating because I felt trapped because I was doing the best that I could with the knowledge that I had at the time and then still getting criticized, but seeing like no way out of the situation that I was in. And it made me very emotionally reactive because I felt trapped between a rock and a hard place. And I also very much didn't want to be harming my horse, but I also wanted to continue showing and doing the things that I wanted and going about things that way. And it was a very hard situation to regulate myself within. And I was very emotionally triggered. And what I've also noticed since like developing more science-based training methods and kind of delving into behavioral science as a whole, like both with like horses and humans and other animals, and just learning more about psychology and stuff, and like having that be a new, like, well, not new, it's been a long-term hyperfixation of mine, but I've nosedived into it far more deeply the last few years. That's also helped me learn how to emotionally regulate better now. It's helped me learn how to accept my mistakes and my flaws and be less punishing to myself and be less hard on myself. And it's helped with my learning and growth journey. And honestly, that's partly why I share so much about this. It's not just for the equine advocacy. It's for how much I've seen it's helped me as a person. And I want other people to feel the same, because like I see so many sad, angry, and like hurt, and just people who feel trapped and like unable to help themselves out of a situation that's not fulfilling them and not making them happy. I see so many people like that. And it's really frustrating because I want there to be less pain in the world, and I want people to feel more comfortable in their own skin and their own shoes, and to have more faith in themselves and like enough belief in themselves and their ability that they can maintain that even with the lack of belief from other people. And I really want that to like be a thing. And I want to help other people in the way that I was able to help myself, because I just know how much crappier I felt before. I know how angry and easily triggered I was before. And like, it's not completely related to what I've learned with horse training and psychology in general, because I was going through a lot of trauma at the same time. So it was all compounded by that. But even for healing that trauma and moving past that, learning more about behavioral science and how all behaviors have an underlying motivation, how stress impacts learning and how stress changes your behavior, and how when you're in survival mode, you behave differently and it can also create physical health issues, blah, 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 blah. Learning about all of that made it easier to heal my trauma and access the resources that I needed to really help myself. And that's why I'm just like, so about talking about this. Like, it's, I get so many people who are like, oh, like, you just think you're better than everyone, you're doing this for attention or to be popular. And it's like, no, man, if I was just doing things for attention, I would go with the popular flow and maintain a neutral position that makes me favorable and popular to all sides. I wouldn't take on controversial takes to my own detriment as a creator. I do it because it really actually does matter to me. And I know that there's a lot of people who do engage in advocacy for attention and for personal gain and benefit. And it's definitely a thing. But like, truly, I am not one of those people. Like, I am someone who has grown up my whole life feeling very out of touch with the world and like I'm on a different wavelength than everyone else, feeling like I had to internalize a lot of stress, anxiety, and discomfort, feeling like I lacked a voice, feeling like people couldn't understand me and didn't want to, feeling like versions of myself could never be fully loved and accepted by people, and just feeling like uncomfortable in my own skin for so long and having it make so many years of my life so much more difficult than they needed to be. And I don't want people to go through that for as long as I had to. I want to help make the world a better place that people are more connected with themselves and like making changes that make them feel more fulfilled and happy, because I know how crappy it feels to be in a situation where you feel lost within your own soul and you don't know who you are. And you might not even be aware that that's the case, because I thought that I was being myself in a lot of cases, but I haven't truly been the most authentic version of myself until like, honestly, like this past year has been a very transformational year. Like it's been a scaffolding of like a lot of different years of learning and growth. But like this past year has been a huge transitional year where I've really started to dive deeply into loving myself for who I am and understanding that like I can always come home to myself regardless of whether or not other people stay with me. And it's provided me with the resilience and ability to be less reliant on social connections with people for affirmation and support. Like I still do have my support groups. It's important. But for example, like in romantic relationships, I freaking just let my soul die and let people treat me like shit, because part of me deep down believes that I could never be fully accepted and that there is something inherently wrong with me, or that it was like my job to fix whatever was so broken inside those people that it caused them to emotionally abuse me. And it resulted in me losing so many years of my life, feeling miserable most of the time, feeling super hurt and triggered most of the time, and having that be the most potent emotion in the entire relationship, where it was just deep hurt and just like pain and having like my heart ripped out of my chest repeatedly. And I just coped with that because I was just like addicted to the cycle of like trauma, where there would be the good moments after the really bad, but then like I felt like a freaking zombie. Like I felt mummified, where I was like just going through the motions of life and not enjoying anything. And it was so many wasted years of that when I could have been living my best life and doing things that made me feel happy and fulfilled, and doing them even in the absence of people's love and support, and having the confidence to walk away from situations that didn't serve me, even if it was really painful to do so. Because sometimes the pain of exiting a situation that is not the best part of your life, the pain of doing that, as hard as it is, it's oftentimes less than the repeated pain that you feel from just having repeated circumstances that hurt you and are deeply in conflict with what you want to seek as a person. And sure, like the repeated events that you might encounter where it's just like repeated levels of discomfort where someone's like constantly degrading or criticizing you or just making you feel bad, and just having it be like every now and then, but on a repeated basis. And it might be smaller levels of hurt during those instances, but it's on a repeated basis. So collectively, the level of discomfort and pain that that causes is probably a lot greater than just like leaving that situation and taking the leap. And sometimes that's what you need to do. Like, I'm so glad that I made the changes in my horsemanship that I did, because I would not have been able to emotionally heal and heal my trauma and come to terms with who I am as a person and really start living for myself without doing that. Like, I truly believe that that was one of the biggest catalysts for making these changes that I needed and really starting to put myself first and learn about who I am and what I want to do in life and what makes me happy and what makes me feel fulfilled. Doing that stuff with the horses helped me discover that, because it helped me slow down. It helped me become more mindful and considerate of my horse's emotions and feelings in training, which in turn taught me to be more that way about myself. And it also helped me learn how to let go of past shame and be proud of the fact that I've come a long way. There's a lot of things that I regret that I have done with horses that I feel that I know now were terrible and unfair to my horses. And now I'm just like so taken aback by just this level of gratitude and appreciation for those horses, that they did not hurt me worse, that they still forgave me and let me come to catch them in their fields every day, and that they continued to more or less keep me safe and not lash out in a way that I would have deserved. I'm overcome by the level of forgiveness and benevolence that horses show us. And I'm really remorseful about so many things that I did for so long, because even during all these transitional stages, something that's not talked about enough is when you're altering the way you do things, there's times where you'll bounce back and forth and revert to things that are comfortable old habits. It's not just like a completely linear process where you're going on a constant upswing. No, there's dips and there's valleys, and it's not a straightforward path because you're modifying your own behavior. And part of, like, especially with positive reinforcement, it's usually like a slow process initially. So you really have to commit to see the long-term payoff, and you just have to believe in the process. But there's times where you revert and where you go back to worse versions of yourself. And the whole process is really just about catching yourself earlier, noticing when you're becoming emotionally triggered earlier, and starting to call it quits in training sessions before it gets to the point where you can no longer be the calmest, best version of yourself, or taking breaks, going to therapy, learning how to emotionally regulate outside of the barn, doing less with your horses until you can emotionally regulate better. And it's about catching those things earlier and just developing tactics to handle those behaviors before you get carried away and go back to habits that you don't want to engage in. It's not a linear process. It takes time, it takes practice, and it takes commitment. And you really just have to commit to the process and believe in the long haul. Another example I'm going to use is that with my Mustangs, initially there was times where I was quite discouraged because we'd make progress and then we'd regress, and there'd be days where they were better, days where they were worse, especially with Mesa. Like, it took so long to get to the point where I could actually touch her and have her actually enjoy that touch, because she would let me do it, but I could just feel the tension in her neck and I could feel the resistance and the fact that she didn't actually like what I was doing. And it was really, really hard to come to terms with. And I was just like, is this even going to work? Like, becoming really discouraged and being like, maybe I should just freaking put her in a smaller enclosure and just make her have to deal with me closer by, blah, 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 and regress to something that I didn't want to do. But I didn't do it, and the payoff has been huge. It's just taken longer, but it's made me feel better about myself. It gave me so many hours worth of meditative experiences to really sit with the horses and watch them and start to get comfortable and find joy in doing the slower aspects of things that I would have found boring before. It gave me a lot of time to think and reflect. It helps give me quiet moments in the midst of an emotionally abusive relationship, just to sit with them without pressure and without feeling the need to push and move things along faster. And it gave me solitude and quiet that I needed at that point in my life. And doing that while accepting that I was like, okay, like, I'm not in an emotional state where I can prioritize this in the way that I need to and put as much time into training them on a daily basis as I would like to. I could have done things faster and better if I was in a better emotional state, but I was chronically depressed for like the first 6 to 8 months. No, probably more like 8 months that I had those Mustangs. And it was very, very hard to commit to regularly seeing them because of it. And like, by regularly, I mean like spending lots of time with them. Like, I still went on a daily basis, but there was days where I had to get my mom to go for me a lot of times because I literally just couldn't get out of bed. And then I would think about like, oh, people are going to think I'm such a failure. They're going to think that I'm taking too long to train them. They're going to think that I'm a bad trainer because I'm not making enough progress. And I started to worry about that. And then I was like, I can't do it right now, though. Like, for my mental and physical health, like, I just can't. Like, I don't have it in me to do things in a way that would speed up the process just to appease an audience. And then I learned how to just accept it, because I can see the progress that I'm making on a day-to-day basis. People who judge me online are not there on a day-to-day basis. They're not seeing the full scope of my life and what I'm going through. They're not seeing all the challenges that I experience. They're not seeing the days where I feel really burnt out and exhausted. They're not seeing the years of trauma that my family has endured and how I've had to work through all those years and be pushing myself to a breaking point for so many years, to the point where I like burnt completely out and couldn't do it anymore. And they're not seeing any of that. They're just seeing what I offer them online, which is usually like some of the best portions of life. They don't see the full nuance of it. So it's easy to come from a place of judgment when they're doing it like that. And that's another thing with like the learning journey too, is like thinking about it in that perspective. Like, even people who see you in person at the barn, they don't know the full scope of what's going on around you. Like, I had friends who saw me every day at school and stuff, but didn't know that my brother was actively in heroin addiction and that he'd almost overdosed and died the night prior on like a school night. they didn't know that stuff. They didn't know that I was going through that. And like on those days where I was having a really hard time, I was probably bitchier and having like a harder time and not being myself and being more reactive because I was just at my breaking point. And they didn't know that. It would just make it look like I was just being a dick. And similarly, like throughout all the courses of like these, like even these podcast episodes, because I think I've been doing this podcast for like at least like 5 years now. I should go check. But like even throughout these podcast episodes, there's been a lot of stuff going on in the background that I haven't been able to share at this point. And like one day maybe I will, but there's been a lot of stuff that's been really freaking hard going on in the background of my everyday life, running a business and trying to show up online and produce content and train my own horses and take care of my own horses and take care of myself and make enough money to be able to afford to live as like rental rates just like skyrocket out of control. There's been a lot of stuff that's been going on that's been hard to deal with and has just added more burdens for me to carry while I'm trying to do all of this other stuff to like better my life and like make a difference for my horses. And also then on top of that, feeling judged by people online and feeling like I have to fulfill certain quotas or timeframes. And when I started to let go of that pressure and just be like, I don't care. Let people think what they want. They can think I am whoever they want me to be. I know who I am. I don't need their approval of who I am as a person because they do not know me. Getting to that point and accepting that was the most freeing thing I have done in a long time. It freed me of the burden of living my life in a way where I was being influenced by the actions and behaviors of others and feeling the need to show up in a certain way in order to be accepted and liked by them and be perceived in a certain way. Because even when you try to mask and do things to appease people, it never ends up being perfect. People are still not going to like you, even as you try, even if you're trying to jump through all of the hoops to be the exact type of person that you think they want you to be, you're still not always going to be liked. And if you do all of that, you might end up becoming someone that you don't even like. You might become someone who's just straight up not having a good time and is not happy and is not enjoying themselves in the process of doing that. And you're still not going to be liked by everyone. So freeing myself from the burden of trying to appease other people's opinions perpetually and just accepting the fact that not everyone's going to like me, and the people that do like me and see me for who I am and who know me well like me and they know me. And I have people who love me who know all parts of me and who love me through thick and thin and who have supported me and been there for me for a long time. And who have stood by my side. And like, it's not necessarily the biggest crowd of people, because honestly, like, I have a hard time letting people get super close to me now. But it's a really solid group of people who are in my very inner circle. And then I have different parts of the circle that are closer to the inside of the circle. And then like kind of fanning out a little bit where I have like rings. But the people who are the closest to me, who really have been through, like, heard about all the shit that I've been going through and like have the full scope of like who I am as a person, is very small. And then I have other aspects where people know some of the stuff, but not all of it. And anyways, there's a support network there of people whose opinions I respect and people who respect me and my well-being, people who are willing to like check me when I need it and whose opinions I respect and who I know like have my best interests at heart. There's that support network there, and that's really all I need. I don't need the approval of people who wouldn't be by my side through the difficult stuff anyways and who ultimately don't care about me as a person. And I think that's something that everyone should try to start to operate with in their life, because it's so freeing. And it took me a long time to learn that. And honestly, like, I was so sad and depressed so many different times and just like straight up not having a good time. Like, I lost so many months and years of my life just being upset because of the actions of other people and like how they hurt me, because I was people pleasing and not putting myself first. And just like, also then when you're trying to be the type of person you think other people like, you attract people who might like that part of yourself that you're pretending to be, but then they're never going to fully accept you for who you are. Whereas if you're just yourself, you might chase away the people that you thought you would like, but then you're going to bring close the people that are meant to be there and like you for who you truly are. And it's just way more fulfilling, even if it's a smaller crowd. But yeah, I lost a lot of time and sadness over that. And I don't know, the whole process of learning about behavioral science has taught me a lot about myself, and it's just so worthwhile. And it's allowed me to enjoy my horses more. Like, I haven't enjoyed my horses to the extent that I am nowadays, like, for, like, decades. Like, it hasn't been that way since I was, like, literally a child, because it was way more about certain outcomes and chasing destinations and impressing people and just trying to be who I thought other people would want me to be, rather than actually just doing things for myself and just doing what I want and just like enjoying my horses without like a timeline in mind. And yeah, it's so freeing and nice. And like, honestly, like, I share these things in hopes of like having them reach someone. Like, even if people listen to this who hate me, which I doubt they do because you guys listen to me to talk for like an hour, but I don't know. That aside, even if they did, like, I just hope that they can get to the point where they feel this way about themselves and where they feel good about themselves and like where they don't feel triggered by anything I say, even if it's in direct conflict with what they believe, that they can just go, she's full of shit. I don't care about her opinion. I love myself and I trust the people who are close to me. Like, I really truly wish for everyone, even people who are so directly in opposition with me and who might even personally attack me, I really would love for them to get to the point where my opinions and my existence in the online sphere and in real life does not impact them because they just don't care about it and they're comfortable enough with themselves and what they do that it doesn't matter. I would love that for them because I think it would save them so much time and energy thinking about me when I'm honestly irrelevant to their life and I don't fucking matter, you know? So yeah, I don't know. It's a learning journey and you learn about yourself a lot when you start to change how you show up for animals, because honestly, a lot of times it's easier to start showing animals more compassion and understanding than it is to do for yourself. But you can practice showing that compassion and understanding on animals and then learn how to do it for yourself. And it will be worth it. It will. And also another thing to note before like we kind of close this off is that like going back to operant conditioning, like talking about things how they are and just like saying the facts of behavioral science, it's not anything personal. It's not a criticism of anything. It's just like the way things are, you know? And that's kind of how I operate with life, is that facts are facts. Like being like, oh, the sky is blue, or like my truck is red. Like, that's just the way it is. It's not an attack on anyone who chooses to not believe that, but it just is how it is. And that's kind of just how I've started operating, is just saying things how they are, whether it upsets people or not, because it also just like helps me find the crowd of people that I'm meant to be with. And it's been something that I've been practicing and trying to just push through that discomfort, because boy, oh boy, is it ever uncomfortable, especially when you're a chronic people pleaser, to go into the realm where you're not people pleasing anymore and you're just doing what you want and you're just going about life in the way that feels right for you and just like no longer closing off parts of yourself to make other people more comfortable. It's really hard to do because you have to brace yourself for people to get mad at you and to lash out at you when you're no longer enabling them in pushing you outside of their comfort zone for their outside of your comfort zone for their benefit. And they're going to naturally get mad. They will. And it's just part of the process. So I've been doing that a lot. And it's honestly, like, especially like, shout out to the ladies who have to date straight men. My condolences, because it's rough out there. And if there's any guys listening to this, which I know my platform has way less men listening than women, but that aside, if you're listening to this, I know it's not all men, but it's enough of you that it's like a thing. Like, I have a folder on my phone of just weird and shitty interactions I've had on dating apps with guys, because it's like at the point where it's like comical, where it's like, I cannot believe that people actually think this is okay to say. So let's just make a fucking scrapbook of this shit. But yeah, like, I've noticed that being the way that I am weeds out the wrong type of people faster, because you see right away, like, how, especially like, I'm bringing up men in particular, because I find that straight men, especially like older men, and this is like, I don't date middle-aged men, but like, this is more of an online reference, not necessarily dating apps, but in general, when a woman checks them or corrects them, some of them feel so emasculated by that they fucking lose their shit. They lose their minds. And I would encourage everybody who is dating straight men to check them on something at some point in the early stages of dating, just to see how they react, because you might dodge a bullet way quicker if you do so. And it's really telling. So I've fully kind of stepped into and embraced just being who I am and maintaining my integrity, my honesty, and showing up for the world in the way that I want to, even when other people don't understand it or when they think that there's some weird ulterior motive. And may the right people stick around for the long run and the wrong ones can leave and go find someone who is more aligned with what they want. Because I'm no longer going to be faking who I am or shutting off and watering down parts of myself to make other people more comfortable, because I don't need to have those people in my life. I'd rather have a core group, a really small core group of people who love me for who I am, than a larger group for people that love who they think that I am, the character that they've created in their head. And that's something that I've just stepped into and embraced, because I'm just like, whatever, like, people who care about you will be willing to have discussions even during times of disagreement that are respectful and understanding, and you'll be able to work through all that stuff, and it's not going to get toxic and weird. So like, at any point that it does, then you can kind of reconsider whether or not that's someone who's meant to be in your life, especially if it happens on a recurring basis. Because I mean, we all have bad days. But yeah, so behavioral science, training horses, all connected to personal growth and your own mental health and physical health. Honestly, like, I am so much happier now than I used to be. And I'm still on the path where I'm like fully discovering myself, because I've kind of finally hit the point in my journey where I'm way more open to doing things that I would have been too scared to do in fear of losing people or in fear of being perceived a certain way. And I'm just kind of diving headfirst into just doing it and seeing what happens, because I'm, you know, do it for the plot, man. And just realizing that, like, no matter what happens, that I can cope with it, you know, I can cope with it. I used to think that I needed to be in a relationship to be happy, and that like I was very like wanting to always have a partner, which is why like I've stayed in shitty relationships before. But now I'm like, fuck, I can be alone. Like, if someone doesn't like me, it's like, they're lost, man. I'll find someone else. Like, I've told my friends, and this is kind of funny, like, for me at least. And like, I hear me out, ladies. This is what you should do. Single ladies, especially for dating men, live life like you're on the fucking Bachelorette. You are the prize. You are the one who is the catch. There's a 7-to-1 guy to girl ratio on dating apps. So you have the upper hand. Live life like you are on the Bachelorette and don't put up with bullshit. And just keep the ones in your life that are meant to be there. And wait for someone to really make a big play for you where they clearly respect you and care about you and want to know who you are as a person, like bumps and bruises and all, like the bad parts and all, parts that might annoy the shit out of them, but they still care about you. Like, hold out for that type of person. Live life like you're on the fucking Bachelorette. Like, I've disappointed so many men by doing this, because I've just been like, I don't care, you know, like, dating feels like a chore right now. I'm just going to dip out off this dating app, and they're all thinking I'm ghosting them, because I'm just like, I can't even open it right now. This feels like a chore. I have too much social media. This sucks. But it's like, whatever. They can find someone who's more interested and more committed to them, and good for them. All the power to them. Best of luck. You do you. So that's my recommendation. I know that's completely unrelated to the rest of the content in this, but even with friends, like, once you do the inner work, like, this is not to encourage people to just like be a piece of shit and like make other people feel bad about themselves, but like, just recognize the fact that you don't need to include people in your life if they don't make you feel good. Like, you will be okay alone with your close family and friends. Or even if you don't have close family and friends at all right now, you can go out and you can enjoy the finer things in life by yourself. You can get a cat or like a dog, and like a little fuzzy friend, a little furry guy who is your friend, you know, a little guy who is your friend, and just have them in your house and hang out with them, and they'll love you unconditionally. And you can do that while you source better people to be around that make you feel fulfilled and happy. It's okay. It'll be fine. And more people care about you than what you realize. And the right people will love all versions of yourself as you grow and change, and they will stick with you through the long haul. And the ones that you lose really aren't a loss. It's just trimming the dead branches of your tree of life. So thank you for listening, everybody. I hope that this provided some people with some clarity. If you've gotten to this hour and 15 minute mark of listening to me talk, thank you, because I can talk for a long time, clearly. So I'm greatly appreciative of all of the love and support from the podcast. We're almost at 100,000 downloads of the podcast, which is super exciting. So thank you for everyone who has done that. And I think those are just the downloads off of Podbean app. I don't know how to check for Spotify or anything, honestly. But thank you so much for your support of me, my brand, and everything I do, because it's been an integral part of my growth is like the online influence and support and people that I've met online and information that I've been able to access online. So while social media is a double-edged sword where there's some stuff that really sucks and that is really hurtful and hard to navigate, it's also provided me with a lot of learning opportunities that I'm really, really grateful for, because I think they've ultimately led me down the path that I'm now on. And it's a path that feels the most aligned with my soul and with who I am. So thank you, everybody, for your role in that. Even if your role was bashing me as a person and telling me I'm a piece of shit, you still helped. So thank you. So yeah, thank you for listening to the Making Milestones podcast. I really appreciate it if you like, comment, share the podcast, offer suggestions for different topic ideas for future episodes. If you subscribe to any of my subscription services to help me afford life, that's also appreciative. And there might be some benefit to it for you if you want to learn more about positive reinforcement training and join in on the monthly Q&As. And yeah, I just thank you. And if you shop at my store, thank you again. It's a small business owned by me, myself, and I that I started on my own with no money out of pocket. So sometimes I was straight up not having a good time because I had no money, but I believed in it and I just kept it going. And I'm really appreciative of all the people who have supported that as I learn how to be a business person, because again, it's not mistake-free learning in that realm. It's new to me. I'm not what I would consider a business person, even though I own a business. I'm kind of faking it until I make it. I don't know what's going on. I'm just doing the best that I can and learning as I go. And I really appreciate all of the people who've loved and supported my business through that. Even when packages have been late, even when emails have gotten lost and I've been late to respond to things. I really appreciate how kind and just lovely so many people are, because it has made a huge difference. And it's been really nice to just see how the vast majority of people are really lovely, kind, and considerate people, and to just learn about so many different people from different walks of life. It's been a really cool experience overall, and I'm just excited to continue seeing where it goes. And I hope that someday in the near future, I can build my business to the point where I can really give back in a big way, more so than I have been able to. And that's really what I'm motivated and gunning towards. And I'm going to continue chasing that until it's in my grasp. I intend to. So yeah, thank you everybody for listening. And yeah, don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, my YouTube channel, my Instagram, my Facebook, or anything else. And check out the links down below in the podcast description to see where you can subscribe or shop and check out my stuff. So anyways, love you all. Have a great day. And if you're having a hard time right now, my thoughts are with you. You will get through this. And in a while from now, you'll look back on this and be like, I did it. And I'm strong and I'm beautiful and I'm lovely and I did it and things are better now. And I'm glad that I pushed through that. So keep on keeping on. Life is hard sometimes and it sucks, but you're not alone and you can do this. Anyways, have a great day. Love you all.